From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The Southern Poverty Law Center has released a new report about the number of hate groups peaking in the U.S. The year 2018 was the fourth year in a row that the number of hate groups rose. The organization lays the blame for the rise in hate groups in part on Trump. According to the report, Trump has activated a growing fear in many white Americans who view their power as threatened by our country's rapidly changing demographics. He is taking advantage of their rage against change, end of quote. The SPLC report comes just as a white supremacist man named Christopher Paul Hassan was arrested in Maryland after federal law enforcement found a massive weapons cache at his home. Hassan was apparently planning a major domestic terrorist attack aimed at politicians, journalists, and even possibly Supreme Court justices. He wanted to, quote, establish a white homeland, and is reported to have said, quote, I am dreaming of a way to kill almost every last person on the earth. Soon after his arrest, President Trump declared the New York Times the enemy of the people on Twitter for their coverage of his potential wrongdoings. The Times retorted that his rhetoric continues to be dangerous and encourages violence against journalists. My guest is Heidi Beirich. She leads the Southern Poverty Law Center's Intelligence Project, which publishes the award-winning intelligence report and the Hate Watch blog. Welcome to the program, Heidi.
Thank you so much for having me.
So this latest report is the latest edition of the intelligence report. Tell us a little bit about this report. It's something that predates the Trump administration, right?
Yes, we've been publishing an annual Year in Hate report, which includes our list of hate groups, anti-government groups, our hate map, for quite a few decades now. And so this is something we do annually, and what it is a census of hate groups across America. So we released our numbers for 2018 of active hate groups on Wednesday.
So the report has found, as I mentioned, 4 years in a row now of steadily rising hate groups. So it's measuring the number of organized groups, right? We're not talking about individuals here. These are actually groups that self-identify in various ways.
That's exactly right. We're not counting individual people. What we're counting are organizations that essentially push or believe hateful ideologies. So these are like, you know, groups that are card-carrying organizations that have a membership and a structure and chapters across the nation. So, you know, there are also, of course, many, many unaffiliated individuals across the United States that are involved on the web or in other ways in hate activities. That's not what we count. We count groups.
Right. And so in some ways, if you actually were to try to estimate how deep and widespread sort of this sentiment is, it would be even bigger because there are plenty of people who don't officially affiliate with these groups, but who may espouse the ideology. Now, 2018, as we said, was the fourth year in a row that these number of hate groups peaked. But of course, Trump has only been in power for 2 years. So how do you link the Trump administration and specifically President Trump's rhetoric and the rhetoric of those in his administration with this trend?
Well, here's the thing. The four-year period that we've seen hate groups go up tracks exactly with Trump's announcement of his run for the presidency, so his campaign, and then his first few years in the presidency. What's interesting about this is we've now hit an all-time peak in the number of hate groups, the most we've ever counted at the Southern Poverty Law Center, 1,020. And there's been a 30% jump in those 4 years. In the 3 years prior to that, sort of the waning years of Obama's second term, the number of hate groups was actually falling. We hit a low in the high 700s at that time. So that's why we ascribe this to Trump. But, you know, of course, there's more than that. There's also the fact that Trump has enlivened these groups. He's tweeted out some of their material. He's played to them. His anti-immigrant sentiment and so on. These are all things that make white supremacists very, very happy. happy. And the segments of the movement that are most tightly tied to Trump, what we call white nationalists, the sort of people you think of Richard Spencer right after the election, you know, saying hail Trump at an event in D.C., those folks actually saw a rise of 48 groups just between 2017 and 2018.
Now, in your report, you identify the alt-right, which is this interesting catch-all phrase, sometimes attributed to Steve Bannon, who was until recently or until a couple of years ago a member of the White House staff. And you say the alt-right in the report is still killing people. Explain, and it feels like that term has sort of gone out of fashion since Bannon left the White House. How do you define what the alt-right is? And how are, I mean, we're not just talking about espousing hate. We're actually talking about murder here that's linked to the hate, right? People are being killed.
That's exactly right. So we put out a report about a year ago called The Alt-Right is Killing People, and we talked about the very high numbers of dead that had happened in a very short period of time. Just in this last year, there are 40 people who've been killed in the U.S. and Canada by people who ascribe to alt-right ideologies. And what I mean by alt-right is this. These are groups that are racist, bigoted, anti-Semitic, but something that makes them different than past white supremacists is they are also extremely misogynistic. Women hating has become an integral part of what are essentially millennial racists. You know, the alt-right is a term that young racists have used to brand themselves. There's no question that Steve Bannon caught on to it. And, you know, he said that Breitbart, his website at the time, was the platform for the alt-right. But the major players here are pretty young, and they're mostly young males who became radicalized into white supremacy online. And the online space, for those who are unfortunate like me to have to spend time in it, where racists kind of, you know, hang out, is so misogynistic. It's really a new thing that we did not see, say, in the first decade of this millennium.
And so you include the 2014 killings by Elliot Rodger, the shooter in Santa Barbara, who made it very clear that his targets were women. But then there's also Nicholas Cruz, the Parkland, Florida shooter. So you have right there the sort of intersection of gun violence or gun proliferation and this nationalist and white supremacist hateful ideology.
That's right. I mean, a lot of people don't realize that Nicholas Cruz posted a lot of racist stuff online. That's what gets him to be included. And we start with Elliot Rodger because he was the first person to really go out and want to commit violence against women specifically. Elliot Rodger is actually a hero in these misogynistic racist worlds. They call him things like Sir Elliot. And so it's very important that we mark it with that attack. And, you know, this last year has seen more attacks on women. You'll probably remember the van attack in Toronto, where a person who was affiliated with one of these misogynistic groups killed a bunch of women on the street. There was also a killing right after the midterm elections in Tallahassee, Florida, where a man shot two women in a yoga studio, and it turned out he also was rabidly misogynistic.
So there's a wide swath of or wide spectrum of hate that these organizations direct their anger toward many demographics, women, immigrants, Muslims. And you point out in the quote that I read that this is basically a rage against change. So we're talking about a change where the country is becoming browner. The country is also one where women have more opportunities than before. Is this a reaction, a sort of dying gasp of white male patriarchy and power in the U.S.?
Well, I think you really can see it that way. I mean, what this is a movement that cannot stand increasing rights for people of color of all kinds, increasing rights for women. And they are absolutely terrified by the fact that the census tells us sometime in the 2040s, white people will be a minority in this country. In other words, the U.S. will be extremely diverse and there'll be no majority population. These are people who fear that deeply. And Trump has really tapped into that by raging against immigrants, because that is the population that's growing the quickest. And from the point of view of a white supremacist, is displacing white males. So yeah, I mean, I'd like to think it's a last dying gasp. But it's certainly something that is enraging people. And, you know, what you got to worry about is more violence from these folks. We've just seen this, Coast Guard employee who was arrested, who wanted to create a white homeland by using mass violence. You think about Robert Bowers in the Pittsburgh Tree of Life synagogue shooting. 11 people were killed, and he wanted to kill Jews because he thought that they were bringing immigrants into this country. These fears that this particular population has, white males has, a segment of it, are turning out to be quite violent. And that's the thing that we really have to keep our eye on, because the country is going to become more diverse, and more and different kinds of people than in our history are going to be elected into positions of power, are going to run businesses. This is all a wonderful thing for the United States. But there is this group of people who are adamantly opposed to those changes and are willing to use violence to stop them.
There's that adage that those who've been in power for so long view equality as oppression, and it seems to apply here. I want to hone in on the anti-immigrant sentiment briefly. 2018, which is what this latest intelligence report covers, was the year where Trump glommed onto the migrant caravan or the refugee caravan from Central America that was headed to the U.S. and found safety in numbers and wanted to, most the majority of them, as we understand it, apply or use their international right to apply for asylum in the U.S. How did Trump's rhetoric, specifically about that caravan, feed into the hate in 2018?
Well, there's no question that it was a major factor. I mean, one thing I think makes the point here is Robert Bowers, the Pittsburgh shooter, was referring to the caravan as invaders, which is exactly the language which Trump has used against the caravans, but also immigrants in general. In other words, a mass killer parroted back Trump's words to him. So these attacks on immigrants and on Muslims are things that we have seen people who've committed mass violence are repeating from the president. And of course, the president, when he says these things, these horrible things, is validating racism, bigotry, hatred for people like are in the hate groups that we track. You know, they are able to then say, well, it's not just me who thinks the white genocide is happening. Trump says these people are invaders. And, you know, what I often say to folks about this is, what do you do with invaders? What is an invasion? You know, it's an armed insurrection taking over your country. It's no surprise that some people will pick up a gun to push back. And, you know, we could also talk about hate crimes here. It doesn't just have to be domestic terrorism. We have data at the SPLC for the days after the election and the months after the election showing that immigrants and Muslims were some of the biggest targets for hate crimes in that time period. And hate crimes in general have been going up for the last 3 years since, Trump came on the scene. So this is what happens when you use the bully pulpit for bullying ends.
I also want to focus in on violence against the LGBTQ community. This is a community that has been targeted by the Republican Party as a whole in state-by-state bills undermining their rights, and certainly the Trump administration, one of the latest examples being basically putting a ban on transgender service members in the military. How serious are attacks on this community, and how do we draw that line between the Trump administration, but even members of Congress and other sort of political figures?
Well, first of all, the LGBT population is extremely vulnerable to hate crimes. They suffer from violent hate crimes at levels far above what they appear in the population. But perhaps one of the most terrible things about this new administration is you have an alliance. The base, really, of Trump's whole base is an alliance of this: anti-immigrant organizations and their followers, anti-Muslim organizations, and anti-LGBT organizations. So his base is made up of people who would like to strip civil rights from these groups. So what have we seen? ICE raids, deportations, terrible asylum policies, lowering of refugee numbers, et cetera. That comes from the anti-immigrant movement. The anti-Muslim movement resulted in the Muslim ban, for example, and other policies. These are hate groups who worked closely with the White House and then came up with these policies that were then enacted. And then you have the Christian right organizations who do not want the LGBT population to be treated equally and fairly in this country. From them, you get the trans ban and the removal of all kinds of information about LGBT civil rights from websites that the government controls, for example. And so we have this sort of alliance of hate that is the backing of the Trump administration. And it shows in the rhetoric, it shows in the policies, and it shows in rising hate crimes and violence against these minority groups.
How does social media help to proliferate the hate? Because before social media, before the internet, there had to be sort of door-to-door organizing. No matter what you're organizing around, you had to sort of physically pass out flyers or publish newspapers and get them around. Maybe there was radio and other sort of means of communication. Today, we have the internet.
This is a really important point that you're bringing up, Sonali, is the issue of the online space. Look, in the 1990s, if you wanted to get involved in hate group activity, it was pretty hard to find a Klansman, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, you had to somehow, you couldn't look it up in the phone book, right? There wasn't any obvious way. You had to like run into someone, somehow get on a mailing list, get an invite. It was really hard to connect people to this kind of extremist propaganda or people who believed in it. But with the advent of the web in the late 90s and into the 2000s, everything changed. And now you see propaganda and material, you see it exposed to children, to adults of all kinds, in ways that would have never happened 20 years ago. And we know that some of the major white supremacist killers were radicalized completely online. Dylan Roof, the Charleston shooter, he used Google searches, basically, which pushed him further and further down this sort of hate rabbit hole. It's a serious issue. So one of the things that the Southern Poverty Law Center is working with about 50 other civil rights organizations is trying to get the mainstream platforms, places like Facebook and Twitter, to get hateful materials off of their sites. And after the Charlottesville riots and the violence that happened there in August of 2017, most mainstream internet companies are trying to do something about this. They're not all perfect. They haven't gone as far as we would like. But at least there's an understanding now that you really are radicalizing people, in particular young males, into this stuff, just like ISIS can radicalize people by using the web. So we have to do something about the online space. You know, when I talk about why are hate groups going up, I point to Donald Trump, his policies in that realm, and then I point to the web. And both of them are important here.
Now, you also identify Vice President Mike Pence in your report, who often flies under the radar and is just sort of cast as this pious, you know, straightforward man who might have a few hateful bones in his body, but only because he's a Christian. What should we worry about Mike Pence?
Well, I mean, that base that I was talking about with Trump, when it comes to the anti-LGBT world, that's the world Pence came up in. Mm. He is the Christian rights man in the White House. And so, you know, if Trump were somehow to disappear tomorrow, we would still have a person with bigoted and extreme views in the presidential seat. He's very close to groups that we list as anti-LGBT hate groups, like the Family Research Council and the Alliance Defending Freedom. He rejected a hate crimes bill in Indiana when he was the governor of that state. He passed what's called a quote-unquote religious freedom bill, but really what those bills are about is reducing the rights of the LGBT population. And he's no friend of Muslims either. So, you know, we would still have problems if Pence became president tomorrow that are like what we're seeing today. And I think Pence often, you know, you're right, he flies under the radar. People don't realize what a radical background he actually comes from.
So we have this situation where there's all of these horrendous attacks. Communities are in real danger. They're in danger for their lives. They're demonized. They're constantly dehumanized. And yet and it's stemming from our government, which means that the very institution that is supposed to protect us from this is egging it on. And that's a terrifying moment. And meanwhile, we're told that we have to worry about immigrants pouring over the border and committing massive violence. But all of the real violence is being ignored. There's also this gleeful enjoyment that we see from the right-wing media about the Jussie Smollett story, you know, the black gay actor from the show Empire, who has now been arrested and facing charges about him having staged an attack by, you know, Trump supporters. But it's very rare, isn't it, that attacks like that are ever staged? The very real attacks of the kind that Jussie Smollett said that he was a victim of are happening and not getting much coverage, because often the victims aren't celebrities.
Well, this is a good point. I mean, there is data out of Cal State San Bernardino that tried to figure out what percentage of hate crimes were fake hate crimes, or hate crime hoaxes, as the right-wing media likes to call these. And they found it was a very, very small number. I think it's actually quite sad that these media outlets and folks on the right wing would use a couple examples to undermine the fact that we have real hate violence happening in this country. You know, the FBI tracks 5,000 to 6,000 hate crimes a year, but the Department of Justice has done survey research that shows that the number of hate crimes in this country are about 250,000 a year. In other words, we only capture the data on 5% of these cases. And if we had the data, if we went through the process of training law enforcement to collect this, making victims feel safe, working with community groups, all the kinds of things you'd have to do, that would put hate violence, if it was at 250,000 a year, on a level with lots of other violent crimes. So I find it very cynical to take the Jussie Smollett case and undermine what is a real problem in this country. And I just like to say in this context, for those who want to think that all hate crimes are fake, you know, the United Kingdom, which has a population of about 80 million people, collects information and prosecutes 60,000 hate crimes a year. And I don't think that that's all a bunch of hoaxes.
Heidi, there are the extremist groups that identify with what's coming out of the White House, but then there's also anti-government groups, which is an interesting aspect of these hate groups. And I'm wondering if you can explain, first of all, what's in the report around how we see a rise in anti-government hate groups in the year 2018, but also what the relationship is between these groups, how they view the current government.
Sure. Okay, so anti-government groups have an interesting pattern. They tend to fall when Republicans are in office and rise when and I'm talking about the presidency, when Democrats are in office. That largely has to do with one of the main issues for the anti-government movement is fear of losing their guns, right? Gun control. They're really worked up about that. These are not, now when I say anti-government groups, I'm not talking about somebody who wants a smaller government or lower taxes. These are organizations that believe in grand global conspiracies. One of their favorites was that Obama was going to work with the UN, get these black helicopters in and round people up and put them in FEMA camps. They're really extreme conspiracy mongers. And Alex Jones, for example, who's like the king of conspiracies, is very popular with these folks. So true to the historical pattern, we saw about a 10% drop in the number of anti-government groups between 2017 and 2018, down to 612 this year. This could change in a minute if politics changes. If somehow a Democrat wins in 2020, we'll see these organizations ramp up again. What's interesting is in the 1990s, when you also had a very, very large anti-government militia movement, now, there are elements of hate in these sectors that we didn't used to see. A lot of anti-Muslim and anti-immigrant rhetoric among these groups, and some of them even showed up at the Charlottesville, you know, hate protests in 2017. And we've seen some militia members show up at hate events. That's really quite different than in the past. The one thing that hasn't happened for them in the last year or two is given them anything to really rally around. They feel like Trump is protecting the policies and issues they care about. You might remember the Bundy Ranch standoff in 2014 or the Malheur takeover of that wildlife refuge in Oregon 2 years later. Those were things that this movement used to rally people. They haven't had something like this year. But believe you me, if they feel like Trump is a threat or the White House is going to swing to the left in 2020, we will see more and more people added to the ranks of this movement.
Finally, Heidi, I want to ask you about the responses from Trump supporters. And I don't just mean individual supporters, but, you know, the entire operation, those in the Republican Party, White House staffers and administrators that, will respond to this report with extreme skepticism and claim deniability between the president's rhetoric, their own rhetoric, and these hate group, the rise in the hate groups, the hate crimes. They feel that there is no relation whatsoever, even though that relation is so apparent to the rest of us, and so apparent to people like yourself who track it and who do these detailed reports on it. How do you respond when they say, "There's, you know, Trump is not fomenting this. Don't link Trump to this."
Well, they probably will say that. Last year, a spokesperson, you know, we also had the numbers were up last year, not as high as this year. A spokesperson from the White House dismissed our report. I guess I'll just let Joe Scarborough of MSNBC, the former Republican congressman, speak to me. He said this morning that Trump was directly responsible for that Coast Guard guy who had Scarborough on his enemies list, his kill list. And I think that that's what's happening here, regardless of what people in the administration want to say. They have created a climate of hate that has led to more hate violence, more domestic terrorism, an energized white supremacist movement. There's just basically no way to dispute the facts unless you want to stick your head in the sand.
Right. And you were referring to Christopher Paul Hassan, the man that we mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, the former Coast Guard person, who among his targets was not just Joe Scarborough, Nancy Pelosi, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Kamala Harris, and others. Yeah, it's very, very interesting. I mean, and I'm sort of thinking of the accusations that Ilhan Omar faced of being anti-Semitic when she called out the power of the Israeli lobby from the same administration that feeds so much anti-Semitism and whose rhetoric, you know, led to the Pittsburgh synagogue massacre as well. So we just see such terrible double standards. Well, I want to thank you so much, Heidi, for joining us today. We're out of time. Where can people read the report themselves and share it?
Sure. It's on our website at splcenter.org, right on the front page, if you're interested.
And we link to it directly as well. Thank you so much, Heidi, for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Heidi Byrick leads the SPLC's Intelligence Project, which publishes the award-winning intelligence report, the latest edition of which just was published, as well as the Hate Watch blog. We've been discussing that report and how the Trump administration fuels hate. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.